reactionary politics and reactionary thinkers did not like this kind of situation any more than many leftists did, which I think has been a hard thing for a lot of leftists to wrap their head around, right? And this is because a lot of reactionaries associated what we might call the neoliberal Thatcherite era, yes, with support for capitalism, which we're very happy with, right? But also kind of social liberalism that was creeping in to every sphere of life. And what reactionaries were able to do was develop a kind of faux time consciousness that suggested, well, we're not going to move forward to the future because the future remains canceled. The socialist future remains canceled, if you want to use that terminology. But we can bring something back that they've taken away from you. And that's, you know, the time when you as a white man were king of your own little castle, right? Or, you know, this was your country, a white man's country. They really were able to capture a lot of enthusiasm for change that ideally should have gone to us, you know, people on the left. We were just not able to develop a sufficiently inspiring project that was aimed at the future to break out of the kind of malaise that one would associate with, to use the terminology, like the end of history kind of period.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to BungaCast, the global politics podcast at the end of history. I'm Alex Hokili in São Paulo, Brazil, joined by George Hoare in London. Hello.
Hello. Why did you say hello so skeptically? I am in London. And hello.
Hello. Is that the right thing to say? Hello. Is that where we are?
Heidi, hi. Howdy.
Yeah.
What's up? There are lots of options.
I was going to say, you can always go like sup or something.
Yeah. I never get any good responses from what's up. So it's... Anyway, that other voice you've just heard is Matt McManus, who's assistant professor at Spelman College and the author of The Rise of Postmodern Conservatism and The Political Theory of Liberal Socialism, amongst other books. And we're going to be talking specifically about that notion of postmodern conservatism today. Hi, Matt.
Hey, great to talk to you. And shout out to all the Damage readers. Great magazine.
Very good.
What a great guest. He's doing things that, no offense, Alex, you should be doing.
I like the magazine. I've enjoyed writing for it. I've enjoyed the feedback from readers and editors, right? What's not to like?
He's not even paid to say that. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah. Well, as you may have gathered, this is an episode in partnership with Damage Magazine. We're actually going to be talking about and around the issues presented in Matt's piece in the fifth issue. The fifth issue is on the pre-political. And we recently had a go at explaining what the pre-political was on this podcast, because it's one of the five big kind of overarching priorities or themes that we want to explore on the podcast this year and beyond. So you'll have to listen to that episode. We did that in the Reading Club, which has just come out today as we record this, which is Thursday, the 5th of February. You listener will be hearing this a few weeks on from that, but I would urge you to check that out, not least because the issues and themes discussed in that Reading Club episode pertain, I think, quite directly to what we're going to be discussing here. So it's a way of elaborating on that. One of the themes that we want to focus on this year as a priority, as well as the pre-political, is also political recombinations, which is a way of saying that everything's politics is back, but crazier than ever. Or to put it a little bit more sophisticatedly, to say that various forms of ideology today are perhaps confused. They implicate different class alignments behind different politics. And even perhaps the very notion of ideology has changed. We went through maybe the end of ideology in the 1990s, and a lot of ideological talk is back, but in very weird ways. And often these aren't thick ideologies, which answer all sorts of questions about life, society, relations, etc., but only answer a few of them, making them thin ideologies. So that's something that we discussed in a bigger discussion in the Reading Club about a concept called illiberalism, which we may draw upon. I say all this, one, to kind of tell Matt about what we've been recently doing, but also tell listeners that if you want to flesh this out, go check out that latest Reading Club episode. In fact, One more reference I'd like to make in terms of stuff that we've just put out. We have an episode which came out at the start of this week with J.F. Trollet on the radical right and its foreign policy, the relationship between paleoconservatives and neocons, which is more important in the Trump administration, and indeed the relationship between paleocons and the European New Right, how much these pursue a civilizational perspective, civilizational nationalism, perhaps. So digging into the roots of the contemporary right, which we don't even know what to call it. I mean, I think we've been generally calling it the radical right on this podcast, but you know, people knew it as the alt-right back when maybe it was the alt-right and no longer is that. Maybe it's no longer alt because it's the main right today. Anyway, maybe these are questions that we will deal with today. But specifically, what we're going to get on to is this now very worn out old notion of postmodern, postmodernity, postmodernism, and whether the right, whether the conservatives are as postmodern as the postmodernists they critique or used to critique. So just to start us off, Matt, although we've talked about it many times on this podcast, it'd be useful to get a bit of a summary of the postmodern condition or the postmodern or postmodernism, however you prefer, as a way to start us off to understand what we're referring to when we talk about conservatism and postmodernism.
Sure. Well, the term postmodern or postmodernity obviously is eminently contentious. And how you define it is not a neutral activity. I'm not saying anything that people don't know, because if you define it in more negative or descriptive terms, that's going to kind of connote or denote the politics that you're associating with it. Broadly speaking, I discuss two ways that people have understood postmodernism or postmodernity, one of which is the one that you'll usually see caricatured and criticized in conservative media, which refers to a kind of offensively French form of intellectual and aesthetic activity. This is, you know, the kind of way that you'll see postmodern neo-Marxism described by people, for instance, like Jordan Peterson. And, you know, the idea is that once upon a time, we were committed to Enlightenment principles of reason, tradition, law and order, formal equality before the law, you know, all the good things that, you know, Ronald Reagan and AL would sign off on. And then these nasty French theorists and bewildering artists came along and they decided to undermine all that by, you take your pick, you know, deconstruction, genealogical analysis, critiques of meta narratives. And, you know, they associate that with a drive towards a certain kind of left-wing politics, whether Marxism or you name it, right? You know, a good example of this, since I already mentioned Peterson, would be Stephen Hicks, right? In the 2000s, Stephen Hicks, for those who don't know, is an objectivist libertarian philosopher, right? Follower of Ayn Rand. He wrote a book about the connection between postmodernism and socialism, essentially arguing that postmodern theorists were trying to advocate for socialism by any other name, just with a bunch of identitarian flourishes. Now, that's not the form of postmodernism that I'm really interested in, mostly because I think, by and large, it's a pretty bunk way of looking at things. As somebody who's a lot more sympathetic to Marx and Marxist analysis, when I talk about the postmodern condition, I'm referring to what Jameson, for example, would describe, right? A kind of cultural mode of approaching the world, a culturally mediated mode of approaching the world that impacts many different domains of life, art, politics, philosophy, movies, obviously, you know, the internet and different digital spaces. And by and large, Jameson and other Marxists are quite critical, actually, of the postmodern condition. You can also think about people like David Harvey or Terry Eagleton, right? In no small part because they see the postmodern condition as putting restrictions on the possibility of achieving something like a socialist revolution or even socialist reformism. And we can get into why they think that way. My view on postmodernity, I'd say, is a little bit more granular. So in my book, The Emergence of Postmodernity, I claim that the primary catalysts for its appearance are liberalism, secularism, and capitalism, of course. And I would argue that the primary characteristic of postmodernity, and this is a point I take from Mark Fisher, is the dissolution of historical time consciousness and the kind of retrenchment of a phenomenological time consciousness in its place.
Interesting stuff. So you finished on this idea of the dissolution of historical consciousness as the kind of the postmodern condition. So I guess this raises a pretty kind of significant question about postmodern conservatism, because like, isn't conservatism premised on the consciousness of the past and having some like memory of what you're trying, what it is you're trying to conserve? Maybe not. I mean, I guess you can conserve the present and not try and move things back to the past. But anyway, do you have a, I should actually arrive at